Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast, episode 57. I'm your host, Spencer, joined, as always, by Michael.
Hello, everybody. I would like to direct your attention to Chris Beard's latest fireside chat, because he mentions a restaurant in Post, Texas that I've never heard of with a very intriguing name. Have you seen this yet, Spencer?
I have not.
Okay. So today his recommendations were Holly's Drive-In in Post.
Yep, heard of that one.
Said to get a malt. Yeah. I've eaten at Holly's. Holly's is good. It's just right on that main 84, rolling right through
town.
On
the main drag.
On the main drag. And his other recommendation was for a place called Moose Knuckles.
That can't be.
On the outskirts of Post.
A savory place.
They apparently make a great burger. So if any of y'all in the Post area, in the Post Tri-County area, Lynn Terry Garza County, sorry, I was saying the co-op because it's named after all three counties. If you're within that area, let us know about Moose Knuckles Burgers. And if Coach Beard is correct in his assessment of it being one of the top five burgers in the state.
So here's something in regards to burgers.
They're great.
Yes. We still need to figure out a time to go to Christakis.
Yes.
But when I told my director that we had gone to Joel's, she's like, "Oh, that sounds like a place like she sent." So she said that sounds like it's out there by a place called Cuevas, and it's another hole in the wall Mexican restaurant. But she's like, "You don't go there for the Mexican food. You go there for the burgers."
No way.
And the girl that she went with was like, "Well, but we're at a Mexican food restaurant. I got to get like a cheese enchilada." And then she said they came out with a cheese enchilada with the chili sauce on it, whatever, and like a Kraft single melted over the top of it. She's like, "Maybe this was a bad choice." But the burger was really good. I was like, "Well, I've never heard of Cuevas before."
Me neither. I hadn't heard of that one either.
If you've heard of Cuevas, y'all, you have to let me know what the burgers are.
Yeah. Back to Beards real quick. He recommended couple of songs. Of course, Nothing I Can Do About It Now by Willie Nelson. It's a good one. I think that was off the Redheaded Stranger album. I'm not sure.
See, I have no idea what you're talking about. So,
and then Friends by Houdini, which is an old rap song from the 80s. And I tried to listen to it. No. Couldn't even. It's really bad.
His taste in music is something else.
That one was hard to get through. I didn't make it through. Maybe it got better. I should have given it more of a chance. But it was some early rap. I'm not going to even attempt to try to flow or anything like that, but it was a little dated. Anyway, were we talking about?
We're going to talk about our top five movie vehicles.
Yep.
Before we get into sports night, this is something I think we mentioned on the recording last week. I'm like, we're gonna have to get into this next week.
Yeah. We tabled it for another week.
Unsurprisingly, Michael's list is filled with old cars that are junkers.
How dare you?
We will go.
You have two of the same car on your list.
We will go one through five and then honorable mention, because I had several on the list. I was like, they're cool, and they're cool enough to mention. Like, they're an honorable mention, exactly what they are, but they're not top five. So, my list, 1 to 5. Number one, 67 Mustang Shelby GT500. Eleanor.
Will this be Eleanor?
Eleanor. From if you look at a movie specifically, it's from Gone in 60 Seconds, but if you know the vehicle, you know it's...
Is it from... Now, that was a remake, wasn't it?
Yeah, so the more recent one with Nicolas Cage. Yeah.
Let's ride.
And he did a really good impersonation of Cage there. When he's psyching himself up to actually...
How did Robert Duvall get talked into that movie? That's fantastic. I love that he was in that.
Which is funny because I think that's one of the first movies of his I ever saw.
No.
So really? I had no idea what an actor he was before this.
So you're like, oh, this guy's also in Deep Impact. That was your Robert Duvall knowledge?
Basically, yeah. Number two, I think this is the vehicle that probably sparked this conversation. Well, sparked the ranking. The conversation we started was last week in the Slack chat with Keith. This is the 1975 Chevrolet K5 Blazer from Last Action Hero. And if you haven't seen this, it is a early to mid-90s action spoof type movie. But it's not like as ridiculous as a spoof would sound. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger as a movie action hero that comes somehow... It's if you haven't seen it, it's hard to describe. The kid watching the movie gets into the movie at one point, so they're like, they're in the movie, and then there's a point where they both come out of the movie.
Oh,
anyways, this Blazer is actually his daughter's vehicle in the movie, lifted like mini monster truck type lift with the massive tires. It was one of the convertibles, like it had the top.
Oh yeah,
off.
The top's gone. I don't think
it's black with the white and red flames come up. We need to bring those back.
I don't think I've ever seen that movie.
Oh, it's great.
But I have that video game on Game Boy, and I could never get past. It was either the first or second level because something just never made sense to me. It just was not a very well.
It was great
conceived video game.
That was great. What are you talking about?
On the original Game Boy. Still got it.
Number three, Aston Martin DB10 from one of the latest James Bond movies, Spectre. The whole like connection between James Bond and the Aston Martin vehicles are quite noted. And I think all of them from like the more current like DB6 or whatever it was, from like Casino Royale and like the last three of them. Been really great vehicles. You've got an older one on the list.
Casino Royale is one of the best scored Bond movies, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And of course, all the gadgets that come with a James Bond vehicle make this awesome sports car just that much better.
Oh, yeah.
Number four.
Oh, this is a great one.
1985 Ferrari Modena GT Spider. Sorry, that was a typo. Spider California from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic movie. Fantastic car in the movie. And the poor guy is like, he's trying to roll back the miles and like they're running on like reverse.
That always drove me nuts because
that's not how that works.
You didn't have to floorboard it with.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The jack up for 30 minutes. before realizing, hey, this isn't working.
And then knock it off the jack and have it.
Yeah, have your tantrum about how awful your dad is and then shoot it off into the
forest.
Into the valley.
Yeah. Last one is going to be 1970 Dodge Charger from Fast and the Furious. From the last scene of the movie. It wasn't
Quarter Mile at a Time, man.
Yeah, I don't think it was in the any part of the earlier part of the movie. I don't think.
I can't remember. They allured to it. It was in the garage.
Yeah.
A little bit here and there. He was working on it, I think. Probably having some Coronas with mi familia.
That was terrible.
Get ready. They're going to get worse.
I was telling Michael, but before we started, I'm a big fan of like the big, chunky muscle cars from like the 70s and 80s. So I've got another Charger on the list.
Me too.
I just think they're so good. There's one you had on your list too, which I won't get to it yet. Well, yeah. Honorable mention is another Charger. This is the 69 Charger from Dukes of Hazzard.
And I guess that's from
General
the,
Lee. This is well from the remake.
From the Johnny Knoxville movie?
Well, it's the same. It's still a good car, dude.
It's still okay. Yeah.
The movie was trash, but the car was still.
Okay.
General Lee.
I'll allow it.
Michael was ridiculing me for this from the second I walked in the door because I didn't make the connection to the name of the vehicle in the movie, but it was the van from Dumb and Dumber, the Shaggin' Wagon.
Chicks dig it. It's the Shaggin' Wagon.
The furry with the ears and everything.
Well, yeah, because you had it typed up here.
It's
a 1984 Ford Econoline from Dumb and Dumber. Like, you mean the Shaggin' Wagon? Yeah. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Well, that's... It's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
Oh, that's a great one.
The Batmobile from the Batman Begins, Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises series.
It's what they call it? Do they call it the Tumbler?
The Tumbler.
Yeah.
Then last one, I think I really angered Michael with this one.
A little bit.
Because it was so low on my list. The 77 Pontiac Trans Am from Smokey and the Bandit.
How dare you even... Just don't even mention it. It's a dishonorable mention to wait that long.
The more I think about it, the more I would want to include one of your vehicles over this one.
Oh, okay. All right. Am I good to start my list?
Please.
All right.
He's come with even, like, quotes from the movie. There's some that's explicit, so he may not.
Yeah, I may not say all of it. Okay. I'm going to start from 5 to 1.
You would.
In 5, we're going to a little jaunt of a movie called Dazed and Confused, where the world first was introduced to Matthew McConaughey as Wooderson and his 1970 Chevelle SS 454 that he nicknamed Melba Toast.
So if I was going to add another big-bodied muscle car, it would have to be a Chevelle.
A-frame, A-body, whatever they call those, yeah. That's like a dream car of mine anyway, this exact car.
I
would take it in just about any color. It doesn't matter. It wouldn't have to be the Melba Toast color with the white racing stripes.
I had a friend in high school. He and his dad built and restored one, and then like his dad gave it to him after they were done.
Sweet. That's really sweet.
It was like candy red with the white stripes.
I would tear up. Oh my gosh,
dude! We were just like, I'm so jealous.
Man, yeah, there was one guy in high school that had a. It wasn't a Malibu, but, you know, a Malibu was basically, that was a Chevelle was basically the same thing as a Malibu, but with all the big motor and all that kind of stuff. But he had a Malibu, and that was really cool looking, and I was pretty jealous of that. I'm not going to do my Wooderson impression.
Oh, so. Well, he's got the great quote in here.
I know, I mean.
Let me tell you what Melba Toast is packing right here, all right?
Yeah, because he does the whole thing, and he kind of puts his hand into it. You can just picture, this is where McConaughey was born. It's great. Just go look up the YouTube video of what Melba Toast is packing. It's worth the 30 seconds. Number 4 for me is an oddball.
This is trash.
Y'all have heard me talk about this movie. It's a 1974 Dodge Monaco dressed up as a Mount Prospect, Illinois police car from the classic movie Blues Brothers. And the reason I include this is because it could jump out of buildings, it could jump over bridges, it could it ran a bunch of Illinois Nazis off of a bridge into the water. It was you could mount a microphone on it. It was a very versatile machine.
Well,
you could do about anything you needed to with that Monaco.
When you talk about like jumping things,
the Bluesmobile,
it makes me think of like I think back to Dukes of Hazzard.
There you go.
You get all these like slow motion of the cars like going off the ramp and landing, and then you see like how badly that car gets jacked up on the landing. Like, I wonder how many cars they went through.
They had to go through a lot
because the frames of these cars would get twisted so bad when they land. Like, the wheels wouldn't be touching the ground once they were.
Well, in Blues Brothers, they drive it through a mall. They drive it through a, completely through a mall. The opening scene of the movie is him picking up John Belushi at the prison in a police car. That pisses off Belushi's character. But then they immediately jump a drawbridge as it's opening.
Yeah.
That's like the first scene of the movie. It's insane. But the other aspect of it that I found interesting was the cigarette lighter didn't work. That was kind of a knock on it. But I think we could work with the rest of it. Number three for me, which would be a terrible car to own, because I think they all came with little, you know, cruddy six cylinders that couldn't get you anywhere, but was a DeLorean. They, the version in the movie of, you know, any of those Back to the Future movies, if you listen to the car, if you listen to the engine that they used, I don't know if they actually had some souped up V8 or something in the DeLorean they used in the movie, or if they just dubbed it over. Yeah, there's no way. There's no way that a DeLorean sounds like that. But that would be the one you'd want. You'd want the one from Back to the Future, obviously, because, you know, you can go back in time, too. That's kind of cool. As long as you got some Libyan connection with some uranium or whatever it was he used. Plutonium? I can't remember. Okay, number two for me is from one of the best James Bond movies ever made. Probably the best to me. It's my favorite. It's Goldfinger.
So you're not a fan of the Pierce Brosnan versions?
Oh, well.
Those were trash.
Oh my gosh, that Die Another Day one where the guy had diamonds in his face, and then there was another guy who was, he underwent all this facial reconstruction, and was it that one?
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of the Batman movies at that time too, with like Val Kilmer.
Batman Forever.
Batman for like that kind of bad, but like for the 007 series.
I think the first couple Brosnan ones were pretty good, but I never got that into them. I liked the Connery ones a lot. Some of the Roger Moore ones I can deal with. Big fan of Daniel Craig ones.
Mm-hmm.
I've liked all of those. Quantum of Solace was kind of bleh, but I think a lot of that was because of the writer's strike. But the rest of them have been great. Casino Royale is probably my second favorite
Bond that one movie. Was good. So was Skyfall.
Skyfall was great. Yeah. Javier Bardem did a really good job with that. Yeah. Adele sang the theme song.
Mm-hmm.
Man. That was good. I saw that one in IMAX. Anyway, I'm getting derailed. So the Aston Martin DB5 from Goldfinger, that is going to be my number two. Ha. And
nice.
Then, of course, my number one.
Trash. It's
goes
way too
all
high.
The way back to a couple of guys who are trying to go to Texarkana and back for 400 cases of Coors in a 77 Trans Am. There's a scene in that movie where that Trans Am, well, okay, it jumps a bridge. It does all sorts of cool stuff, too. One, it just looks cool doing it. And then, two, there's a scene where I remember where whoever's driving, it could have been Reynolds, I don't know, they're pulling a U-turn in the street, and one of the rear wheels comes off the ground. Just as they're turning. They're turning it that hard. And you can see it because the smoke quits, you know, disappears from the fire. It just leans up because there's so much cool action going on. Anyway, that's my number one. My honorable mentions, we overlapped some on that. I really like the introduction of the new style Camaro in Transformers, in the first Transformers movie. I actually bought a Camaro later on. And I think that was in 07 when that came out, but then the actual Camaros didn't come out for another 3 years. But that was really cool.
So when did you get yours?
2010. So,
and then you traded it in for the truck?
No, we traded in for the car a while back. We had, anyway. And then, of course, the Shaggin' Wagon, that makes my list. The Bullet Mustang makes my list. It would be a little higher, but it's just not. I don't have a great reason for it. It's a really cool car. The green is neat. I like that Ford came back and did a Bullet version about 10 years ago, I guess, with a 302 or something. I can't remember what they did. And then the other one that you and I kind of remembered at the end was just about any car from Mad Max or Road Warrior, about any of them. Cause I started to try to narrow it down. And then I thought about Fury Road and thought, man, any of those vehicles in that crazy mess was pretty cool. So we made it. We're 20 minutes in and
haven't talked sports yet.
We haven't talked about sports at all. Welcome. Welcome to 23 Personnel Podcast.
So let's go ahead and do dive into some basketball.
I'm ready.
No.
Yeah.
No, let's do football first.
Okay, let's do football first.
Let's knock that away. Let's talk about some football. Matt Wells and his staff have been on the road recruiting. If you aren't following him on Twitter, you should be. Unlike previous staff, he tweets out whenever there is a recruiting win.
Yeah.
So the thought is most of them that he's been tweeting out have been guys that are already committed, that are reaffirming their commitment to the new staff, or that are previously decommitted that are recommitting. But he tweets out Reckham, and often it comes with a number because he's like, oh, this time it was two.
Yeah. He didn't have time.
Or this time it's three.
He's a busy guy. He can't tweet out Reckham all day. He just,
well, and the thing is,
he's
like,
got to go Reckham times two.
If he sends out three back to back, I'm like, does this guy know how to work Twitter? Or is he just
right? Is he just repeating himself?
I guess the biggest news, McIver did not make his visit to USC this weekend. Still on track to come visit you again this weekend. Who's the quarterback commit that decided to open things up? The defensive end from South Oak Cliff, Stephen Parker, is making an official visit this weekend, where a lot of the commits and recruits are. And then you had a guy that was either a silent commit or really close to committing to Kingsbury during the season I'm blanking on his name. Landon Peterson.
The lineman.
Out of Odessa. So he's officially Matt Wells' first commitment because it wasn't announced beforehand, but he announced his commitment to Texas Tech this week. I think the flurry of recruiting activity, especially this past few days, has kind of calmed down some of the guys carrying the torches and the pitchforks.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're losing. Everyone's like, well, you have to expect that was going to happen.
Right.
But he's been able to grab a good deal of those guys back. Obviously, he got the first new commit. And just things have been, they've gotten on a roll lately. So, you have any hot takes?
No hot takes. No. I'm recruiting is one of my weakest.
The massive
facets.
Wellington offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Trevor Roberson.
That door is not shut yet.
No, he came back and said he will be signing with Texas Tech next week.
That's great.
So 6'11", 350.
Catching passes in the end zone, right?
That's why we're getting him. That's the thing.
Yost is just ready. He's just ready for a 6'11 tight end. That's what we need.
Brought up the point, like, well, I wonder, like, logistically, physically, the mechanics or whatever of the leverage that a 6'11 offensive lineman would give. It's like, okay, let's not have an offensive lineman. Just throw him out there as a tight end and have him run routes, right?
Dang right. Just blow by everybody and just kind of stand in the corner and get the ball thrown to you.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that that big offensive lineman that Baylor had that they started running out there for tight end. And I'm blanking on his name.
400-pound guy.
McGowan, yes.
Yeah.
He wasn't so much tall. He was massive.
Yes.
But There was some other news, I guess. Well, I'm not guessing. There was other news. Antoine Wesley announced yesterday, so Monday, that he was going to be foregoing the rest of his eligibility to enter the NFL draft.
We kind of saw this coming.
There were thoughts that this may be coming. We never heard of like a rumored draft grade. He's like, oh, he's projected to be a second round or a third round. We never got those numbers before he came out and said, I'm going to go ahead and go. Which I guess it led to a little bit more of the surprise of the announcement, because with like QT last year and Mahomes, it was like, well, they're getting like first and second round grades. Like, well, that's an easy decision.
It's a no brainer.
We haven't heard anything with Wesley. Now, I'm not saying it's not good for him to go ahead and go. I think the thought is, everybody that keeps pointing to it, is like, you got to strike while the iron's hot, right?
Yeah.
You had a fantastic junior season. There's no guarantee he was going to be better or even duplicate what he did. So he may have hurt his draft stock. So I would have liked to see him come back
as a senior. Yeah.
Just because of how dominant he was.
Yeah.
I don't fault him.
Not at all. I do feel like he probably made the best decision. I'm not going to say this in a negative way, but I wonder if he would have stayed if Kingsbury had stayed, just because he could guarantee kind of the offense would run very similarly, or the exact same as it did when he went for 1,400 yards and on 88 receptions. But I still think he would have been very productive under Yost's offense.
I do too.
Under Wells' system that they're going to put in place. But you just can't fault the guy. He's healthy. You know, if he stuck around another year, maybe he's worried he might get hurt, because he has been hurt before and had to bounce back from that.
But didn't miss any time to injury this season.
Right. He did.
That I remember.
I don't think so either. Vasher did, of course, off and on, but I don't think Wesley ever did. But it's, I hate to see him go, just as a selfish aspect, but man, and just imagine how much his stock would have been if Tech would have been able to get him the ball the last two games.
Yeah, that would have been, because he would have finished.
I think I would have felt better about it, because you almost feel like you felt like it was more of a proper send-off. Because those last two games, and not his fault by any means, but those last two games were just, they really dampened and kind of brought down all of his chances for his awards and the Biletnikoff and all that kind of stuff.
Which was just a sham. I mean, I'm sorry. Jerry Jeudy from Alabama winning.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, it would have been one thing if it was Tylan Wallace from Oklahoma State. You can kind of see that comparison. Who was the other guy that was also Power Five, or was it? Or was anybody? And then the guy from, what was it, like UMass or somebody?
Yeah, it was UMass.
And he had ridiculous numbers, but then again, it was like, well, he was like the offense.
Congratulations to Wesley. I really hope it goes well. We were all hoping that he'd stick around, that maybe his size would be sort of a deterrent, but I don't think it's going to matter. You know, somebody like Randy Moss was never bench pressing 310 in the weight room or something. He was kind of a tall, lanky guy himself, and he did pretty good.
He did pretty good.
Did all right.
Speaking about doing pretty good in the NFL,
yeah,
guys, this Patrick Mahomes guy,
hey,
was a little.
I've heard about him.
It's ridiculous. That game he had on Sunday,
I missed it.
Stupid good.
We were out running errands, and when I checked, they were down. They were down by a touchdown, I think, and then they ended up winning by three, and this was all in the fourth quarter, so I missed everything that happened.
Just the antics that everybody, like, would...
The no-look pass, I saw that.
That, and just, like, trusting his arm talent to make plays where... As it's unfolding, when he was a player at Texas Tech, you're like, no, hey, that worked.
That was great. That was great.
There was so much of that.
You did that.
But we were talking about this in the office this week. he's pretty close, if not on pace, to beat like the all-time NFL single season touchdown passing record, which was set by Peyton Manning a few years ago. He was 37. Times. He was 37, and he threw 52 or 55. I can't remember.
Yeah, I was in the 50s.
This is Mahomes' first year as a starter, and he's on pace to break the single season record.
Where's he at? Is he 45 or something? Or
yeah, he's like he was 40, in the 40s. Yeah, he's like he's in the 40s. Got four games left, so he needs in that like 10 to 12 touchdown range with four games left. Like I'm pretty sure he's gonna get it. Also projected to get like 5,500 yards, which is just ridiculous.
This is the NFL,
right?
That's not bad. I'm trying to look it up, okay, just to make sure. Because we want to be accurate in our podcast here.
So
43. He's thrown for 43.
And he needs, what, 55 or 56?
I'll look
that up. I think he needs 55 to tie and 56 to reset the record. But still, we're talking about matching or beating Peyton Manning's best ever year.
55.
And this is Mahomes' first year as a starter.
Yeah. Manning threw 55 in 2013.
He was with
the Broncos.
Broncos
then.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's not bad.
So he's got three more games.
Three games needs 13.
Yeah, that's a stretch.
Well, and that's before playoffs.
Okay, well, hang on, because I just want to look this up.
And I'm not sure if the record is like regular season record or if it's like total season. Because if it's total season, yeah. I don't think there's any question
he's already
Mahomes is going to pass him.
Yeah, he's going to be, let's see, Dan Marino had 48 in 1984.
And where does that rank?
I can't find just where I'm at is just by year. Most passes per year. Or most touchdown passes per year. So Marino had 48. Kurt Warner had 41 in 99. He's already past that. The Rams in 99. You remember how crazy that offense was?
Mm-hmm.
And he's already got more touchdowns than Kurt Warner did. Manning had 49 in 2004. He might eclipse that. Brady had 50 in 2007 when they went undefeated.
And that almost was second all time.
Yep. And then Manning broke that in 2013, but Breeze had back-to-back 46 and 43 in 2011 and 2012. Last year was pretty low. Russell Wilson had 34. That was the most in 2017. I just can't imagine being a Chiefs fan right now, in which I am one, but by proxy. I'm not pretending like I grew up in Arrowhead Stadium and I went to the games with my grandparents. No, I just kind of watching this unfold as a Chiefs fan has just got to be thrilling.
I'm a lifelong Chiefs fan, so it's been
lifelong Chiefs fan.
It's
yeah.
been great.
Yeah.
One last football update before we move back to basketball. Kingsbury.
Yes. Former head coach.
Former Cliff Texas Kingsbury. Tech head coach Cliff Kingsbury. Current offensive coordinator for USC Trojans. Michael, you got a note in our document that he has updated his Twitter profile.
Yeah, I also had a sad face emoji.
Well, his sad face emoji is colon right bracket.
Oh.
There's no emoji. It's just
you get the gist. It's old school. It's
the Gen X.
Yeah. It's exennial emoji. Yeah, he's no longer TTU Kingsbury on Twitter, which I think was his old handle. Now mm-hmm. he's just Cliff Kingsbury. He's changed his cover photo and his profile pic. And his cover photo is of a pier.
Strange move.
Out into the...
Probably the Pacific
out
Ocean.
Out into the beautiful Pacific Ocean. With it's palm so trees. That's not strange. That's just... He probably took that. He probably took that from his new hangout.
So his profile picture looks like
it's kind of a non,
but with the guy in the cowboy hat behind
cowboy,
him, that's
yeah.
probably like a ranger. So he's like, well, it's or a marshal,
right?
That's still from Texas Tech.
I think it's still from Texas Tech too, but it's not. There's no double T's or anything present.
He hasn't tweeted since his thank you note to the Texas Tech fans.
You know what? I've never realized this. Cliff Kingsbury has one like on Twitter, and it's to congratulate Coach Loxley as the 2018 Broyles Award winner for Alabama football. That is the only like that he has on Twitter, I think.
What's surprising to me,
wow,
is he follows 889 people.
I'm sure we've got to be one of them, right?
No.
You think he's listening right now? He's probably listening.
Yeah, probably. No, so those are probably
Coach, like, I hope things are going well.
Recruits and players, but then, of course, his follower count, 132,000.
Yeah, that's no big deal. It's just a normal day.
That's pretty close to what I have.
Very, very close.
All right, basketball. Let's talk about some basketball because that's the season we're in. Besides Christmas, I love basketball season.
It's great. It's indoors.
It is, especially after the weather we had here in Lubbock this weekend. We had 10 inches of snow.
We've had more snow
than Anchorage,
Denver.
Alaska,
yeah.
Denver, some northern cities. The other thing that kind of surprised me, I wasn't in the city for this. That big snowstorm that shut everything down was 11 inches of snow. This weekend, it was 10 inches of snow, and it was like, man, we're fine.
Right, right. I don't want to minimize what the city did this time around because it seemed like everything
Props,
worked. Yeah, I think everything worked really well. But
they learned.
That first one was just a perfect storm of awfulness because if you remember back in 2015 or whatever year that was,
mm-hmm,
a layer of Dippin' Dots ice fell first. And then all that snow. I kid you not, I had pictures of it. It looked just like Dippin' Dots. Just a sheet of it covered the ground, and then the snow fell on top of it. And then it stayed in the teens for like 3 days. So we had a little bit better.
Yeah.
The weather cooperated a little more. But the city did, they still, I don't want to minimize what they did, but Lubbock did a pretty great job of being on top of all of it.
So it snowed, what was it, Friday night into Saturday. By Sunday morning, I think we had maybe half as much snow left. Like, there's a lot that had melted on Saturday. I think the weather got in the mid-30s, so it wasn't, like, hot. And then Sunday and Monday have both been in the 50s.
Yeah.
So we had just two little piles of snow left in our yard this afternoon when we came home. They were both where we had the two snowmen we built, the last little bastions of snow.
We tried to do that. Evelyn just was not into it. I took her out to the snow to quote unquote help me shovel the driveway, and she just kind of stood around. She was fine, but I just thought, because she's just so energetic and likes to just dive into stuff, and you know, almost hurt herself having too much fun. She was not into the snow. It just really surprised me. Oh, and my wife took. She was out of town this weekend, and I tweeted one of the photos she took on Sunday morning when she was flying in, and the photos she took as they were coming into Lubbock were just phenomenal. There's just completely blanketed ice, white. If you could find a wind turbine, it'd be hard to see it.
Turbine?
Yeah, one of them wind turbines. What was really neat, though, was you could tell exactly where the cap rock started because it was not white. It was perfectly fine, but the second you got up on top of that cap rock, everything started getting frosty and everything was white. I'll have to show you some of these other pictures that she took.
Yeah, so my first flight into Lubbock was, it was for a, I don't know if it was a recruiting trip or if it was just a campus visit. My mom and I flew out to Lubbock and we met with some of the School of Music staff.
Mm-hmm.
Faculty, that's the word for it. And it had recently snowed in Lubbock, so we were flying in. And I hadn't, my experience with farming was for like East Texas and like Mississippi, like everything isn't in straight rows. They didn't have to be, their irrigation wasn't dependent on water being pumped out of the ground, right?
Right. Yeah.
So when we were flying in, we were seeing all these, the irrigation, the circles. I was like, what the heck is going on out here? And then I realized, like, oh, it's because their irrigation,
yeah,
their sprinklers, whatever you want to call, I don't know what they're called, their official name.
Just pivots. Usually.
Pivots. Yeah. That's a good term.
Irrigation pivots. You hear that.
Like all the fields were just in circles. Like, this is nuts.
I think the first people to do it were from Plainview.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I think it was a lot of stuff that came out from here.
Yeah.
Rotating Apparatus is a big company that I see on I-27 that does a lot of that.
So we said we're gonna talk about basketball, and we're talking about weather and
farming. Sorry.
Basketball season, Texas Tech, one of the 9 undefeated teams left. If you look at that undefeated map,
we've got the Southwest,
yeah,
pretty much cornered.
We border up against Nevada, their area, and Kansas
coming for you,
and Houston. We're kind of in that little, if you can imagine those three locations, we're kind of in the middle of that. Kansas and Nevada picked up some big ground with the Gonzaga loss recently. Everything's just setting up for a really interesting game next week.
It just keeps going that way. We're heading into a pretty, well, I don't want to dog them too much, but a not very good Northwestern State team tomorrow night. But we're 8-0 heading into that.
And you've beaten everybody by double digits.
Yep.
The game this past week, Arkansas Pine Bluff, you did end up winning. You won by 18.
Not your best outing.
You dipped in some of the advanced stat rankings groups. I think it's because you did not beat them as handily as you were expected to. I wasn't paying like 100% attention. I was busy. I was at church that night. I had the game on my phone, but I was also like, we had a Nerf war, so I was like,
oh,
trying to get shot too.
Yeah.
You had a fairly low offensive output at 65 points. And then you held them to 47, which is pretty on par for what you usually do. Their big scoring leader, he got 25 points or 27 points, whatever it was, right around his season average. And then the rest of the team scored 20 points. So you held them outside of their scoring leader, way below average. You kept winning. The thing that we heard from Chris Beard recently is, you know, he's thinking that we've seen maybe 30 minutes of good basketball in a game. And he said 30 minutes is not going to be enough to beat an Abilene Christian. 30 minutes is not going to be good enough to beat a Duke. It's not going to be good enough to beat Big 12 opponents. So you still got one more. You've got one more game before you even get to Abilene Christian next weekend. And that's coming up tomorrow night. Northwestern State.
Yes, the Demons.
The Demons from Louisiana. Is that a... Where are they coming from? Is that a...
That sounds right.
Natchitoches?
Northwestern State Demons.
They are riding the struggle bus, 2-7. And their only wins are over Alabama, A&M, and Centenary.
Right. Which was their first game of the season. And was pretty much a blowout. I did a little bit of math because once I started looking at their records, you know, those 7 losses all looked pretty bad. And turns out they were. In those 7 losses,
shocker,
they have been outscored 402 points to 572. And that comes out to an average score of 57 to 82 for each of those losses.
So they're averaging a 25-point loss.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, and if you go through the numbers and just look at it, it is. It's consistent. I mean, they might have lost some by 40 and some by 15, but there's a lot of them that are 20, 25 points.
So
there should not be any issue with Northwestern State. The Demons shouldn't. And that's what kind of worries me, too. Not worries me, but I wonder if the guys just know that. Same with Arkansas Pine Bluff. I mean, they weren't, their
we were talking about earlier, I mean, who was that guy? Martavius McKnight.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really good scorer, and he had 27. He had 27 of their 47 points that night. So there was a guy on there that was plays at a really high level, but they still just, you know, Tech just did what they needed to do and took care of business. And I know about halfway through the first half, I think the game was within 1 or 2 points. They just kind of hung around, and they were up by 10. You know, Tech was up by 10 at halftime, and it was just kind of lackadaisical. And I kind of don't blame them at this point. They've gone through a pretty easy stretch of basketball. You don't want to excuse anybody or say anything like that. But, you know, when you've played Arkansas Pine Bluff and let's see, who else? Northern Colorado, and you've got Northwestern State coming, and, you know,
Memphis
was the one that gave them some trouble, but they still overcame it. I don't know.
I wonder how many random advertising pitches, advertising pitches we're going to get on the podcast for dropping all these school names.
Oh, let's just keep going.
Northern Colorado, USC.
Abilene Christian University.
Nebraska. Memphis.
University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley.
Arkansas Pine Bluff.
But they, you know, they will have a test.
Duke.
They will have a test against Abilene Christian, I think.
Yeah, they're currently, Abilene Christian's at 9-1 on the season.
I mean, yeah, they're not playing, you know, they're not playing Nebraska and USC and stuff, but they're a solid team.
Probably a pretty good last game going into New York, you know, as opposed to like a Northwestern State where you're expected to roll. You're not going to learn much or take much from that game. I think, in terms of, I mean, it's not like a Memphis or any of those other, the Power Five schools you played earlier. Not the worst team to be going into the game before Duke, but
right.
So the Abilene Christian game is next Saturday in the Coliseum, the throwback game in the Coliseum. Sorry, not next Saturday. This Saturday.
Yeah, this Saturday, the 15th.
I'm going to that game. Got me and the fam some tickets, which
fun.
You heard me purchase on the podcast last week. That's not me.
Oh, there's a car alarm going off outside.
Yeah, it's going way too fast. So I actually set the truck alarm off when I was sitting down.
Yeah.
When I first
got here.
Before
we started.
It took me a good minute to figure out how to turn it off. There's a car alarm going off.
Oh, well. I don't think they can hear it. They got it.
It's off. It's not me. Like I said, it wasn't me because the keys are across the table. So we mentioned the dip. Haslametrics has you at number 43. You dropped from 23 to 43. It's a kind of
considerable,
significant drop after one game
that you won.
Yep, you won. You are continuing to rise in the polls. Otherwise, you're number 11 in the AP poll. So you're still on track. If you win the next two games, have a great shot to be in the top 10 going into the game against Duke. Really, I'm getting excited for this game, and I probably shouldn't, because I want to guard myself, and that's like just a terrible fan attitude to have. Like, I don't want to get too excited or too hopeful and then go up against like a Duke and like just get lose a game that I think we should win or should have a good shot at winning, when maybe that's not necessarily the case. You have any thoughts going into the Duke game?
I'm scared of playing Williamson. I'm scared. I think he's gonna wreak havoc, but I'm not going to go in there with a defeatist attitude either, but it is going to be a heck of a test for our guys. I'm trying to cover it the best way I can. I think Tech will hang in there for sure. I think someone asked us last week in a question just straight up. I don't see Tech winning it, but hey, I'd love to be wrong. I just don't see it right now.
So, when you talk about going up against like a Zion Williamson, you have a guy committed and signed and Jamias Ramsey, who is your highest rated basketball recruit and commit ever. I'd have to go back and look at his recruiting profile, but like top 40, like national athlete on the fringe of being a five-star player. Just has some ridiculous videos. Like there's a video that comes up basically every week of him destroying some poor soul. This week it wasn't fair. He was going up like some girl from his school or whatever, and he dunked on her.
Yeah, but
and like blew her over.
Right, well, it doesn't.
She wasn't ready.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it sounds much worse than it was. He was just kind of nonchalantly. And I can't imagine this being a possibility. He was nonchalantly going up for a one-handed dunk, and she was coming from the other direction and kind of jumped up to block it. And I don't think he even knew she was coming or was going to do that. But yeah, she ended up on the ground.
But then, so some of his end game highlights are also pretty ridiculous.
Oh,
like,
man.
Where he'll steal a ball like half court and he's on a breakaway by himself, and then he'll throw an alley-oop to himself. He'll bounce it off the backboard.
The hair. I love the hair too.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
So
I'm excited about him.
That'll be a player you're looking forward to joining the program next year. Currently you're still waiting for Kayvon Moore to be cleared to physical play. I think he's getting closer. The guys you have, they're overperforming my expectations at this point in the season. And not that you had a tough schedule so far, but the relative ease it looks like this team is having, even against your power five and your bigger opponents, has been a little surprising.
Right. And defensively too, I knew that Owens was a great shot blocker, but I was worried about his size. He appears to have really stepped up, and Labar mentioned it today on Staking the Plains, kind of taken that Zach Smith role this year. Kind of like, I think we sort of predicted that, or were hoping that he would kind of morph into that. And it seems like he has. He's pretty dynamic on defense and can be on offense as well. But I was not expecting how effective he would be, you know, with his size down low. And
you know, he Corporate nearly had a triple well. Double the other day.
He did. What did he have? 9 rebounds or
no. He had a double double, and then he had 8 blocks.
Oh, okay, that's right.
So he had 11 points, 10 rebounds, 8 blocks. Barry nearly had a triple double, and somebody else nearly had a triple double as well. It may have been Mooney.
Kyler Edwards has been a fun guy to watch too.
Yeah, watching him figure it out as a true freshman.
Yeah,
putting the pieces together.
He's playing a lot.
He was previously your highest rated guy, right? Or is that Kayvon Moore?
I think Moore was a 4-star as well. Actually,
all good things with Chris Beard in his program.
You bet. Including Moose Knuckle Burgers.
There's a basketball game, Northwestern State, tomorrow night, Wednesday the 12th. Then against Abilene Christian on the 15th in the Coliseum. And then you got a couple days off before you travel up to New York and take on the Blue Devils in Madison Square Garden, which I've heard is already sold out.
I heard that too.
Which is fantastic.
I know BJ Simmons is going, so if y'all see him, be sure and tell him hello.
Is Dan going?
I'm not sure. I know that he planned on it, but I think something may have come up with his school that he couldn't go. That's right. Something came up. He was planning on going, and I think he may have even had. Well, I'm sure he had stuff booked and ready to go, but I think something came up maybe a month ago, and I think it's going to thwart his plans, which really stinks.
One more bit on basketball before we move on. I'm not sure how to refer to her, but Claire Hale,
yes,
committed to play basketball for Trinity University.
Friend of the blog,
daughter of Travis Hale, who has been a longtime contributor for Double T Nation, Viva the Matadors, and now Staking the Plains. His daughter is a senior in high school down in the San Antonio area. We'll play at Trinity, also in San Antonio. We had a neat piece on her today, a commitment piece that we usually do for basketball or football players. We had her dad, we had Travis do some recruit scouting on her. And,
yeah.
we had like a Q&A session with her.
Yeah, some analysis.
Yeah,
that was great. I'm really happy for her and for Travis and their family, and it's great that she's going to be close to home too.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to see her play a lot, I'd imagine.
So if you haven't read that piece yet, Staking the Plains, Claire Hale commits to Trinity.
Yep.
So let's move on to questions. I have not been following questions.
I've got them.
I just know that my phone says I have 20 plus notifications from Twitter.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, let's see. The way you asked it was, you know, we're back on the Nikes, on the mics tonight. Send us your thoughts, questions. Also weigh in on our hard-hitting topic of top five movie vehicles. So we got a little bit of that in there, too.
That's why I'm seeing a lot of movie vehicle rankings.
I think I'm going to start with,
let's go oldest to newest. Let's just go all the way back. Who was first? It looks like Kirby Hokut knows more than you at Old School Sig. Okay. So his first question, if you're Cliff, do you get a place in the Hollywood Hills with a killer view? Sorry. And short commute, or do you do something on the beach near Santa Monica Pier and increase your traffic grind? We need this to be a House Hunters episode ASAP.
Oh, man. A Cliff Kingsbury House Hunters episode? That's a great idea. I read part of this before, and I didn't see that last part that he tucked in at the end. That needs to happen. And I'm just going to go. I mean, if we go by his Twitter cover photo that we've already...
He's going to the beach,
we've
man.
Already gone into detail. Yeah, I think he's all about a pier. Maybe not Santa Monica or something, but I think he might be close to the water. And he'll probably have him a nice convertible and enjoy the drive. And he'll just be some guy.
Man.
No one's going to be like, oh my gosh, that's Cliff Kingsbury. They're just going to be like, oh, that's just some guy. Some guy driving to work in his
Joe Schmo,
yeah,
and his
drop top Lexus or whatever.
Kyle Jacobson, what does a successful recruiting class look like this year, given the transition period? Well, one, you're still rebuilding your current commitment class, recruiting class. You're kind of up against it with the early signing period that other programs that we are kind of comparing ourselves to haven't had to deal with. Although it goes against the self-awareness. There were a lot of people that were talking about how Tom Herman didn't lose any recruits. One, you're not Texas. Two, Texas is a program that players commit to, not coach. It's not a school that you commit to for a coach necessarily.
Right, right.
So they were probably able to insulate themselves from a large dip in recruiting. Successful. I mean, you've gotten pretty close to getting everybody back, or you're well on your way. Sorry. Successful recruiting class. I'm going to say, gosh, I'm trying to come up with some arbitrary number, but not bottom third of the conference.
So maybe sixth.
I'm going to say seventh or higher.
Seventh or higher.
I
think we're already seeing some successes in the fact that he's retaining or, you know, grabbing a couple of guys that had some trepidations once he was hired or once Kingsbury was fired. I mean, that's kind of a good way to start. Try to get the guys back on your team already.
The next question I think is interesting, though. He also asked, moving forward, what will qualify as a successful class for Matt Wells and company? Because I think expectations should be a lot higher year two. So your 2020 signing class and beyond.
I may have jumped the gun with my reasoning there. That I, to me, that qualifies as successful, is trying to retain the guys that you have that sort of decommitted, quote unquote, when the coaching change happened. And I think it goes back to kind of what you were saying. Just, you just don't want to be in the bottom of the of the conference.
So yeah, I would think year two, I think you need to be top half and consistently no lower than fourth.
Yeah. Please.
Okay. Okay. Red reset, man.
All right.
Do you think Wells should have kept one or two of the previous coaches? Emmett Jones, Clay McGuire, anyone? I think he might have been slipping on his pimpin' when he cleaned house. I'm not sure what that statement means.
I wanted you to read that. I just wanted to see you read that.
Not sure what that means. If you've been following along, Emmett Jones was actually hired, I think, was hired at Kansas today, or was announced today.
I didn't know that.
I put it in Slack, man. What have you been doing?
Working.
Same position. He will be the wide receivers coach at Kansas. I don't know about McGuire. We did see that Kingsbury hired Mike Jinks as the running back coach.
I saw that. Yeah.
USC.
Yeah.
So here's my thought. I think it goes back to when you're hiring a new coach, you want them to hire and build the staff that they want. I think we saw this pretty clearly with what happened with Kansas State this past weekend.
Yes.
It looked like they were going pretty hard after Seth Luttrell, but had stipulations in there that Luttrell would have to keep some of the existing staff. And Luttrell's like, no, I want my own guys. These are the guys I was successful with. These are the guys I think we can be successful with. And you're telling me I can't do that. I don't want to coach here. I don't want to be in that kind of environment. Same kind of thing. If you want to give a coach like Matt Wells the best opportunity to be successful, you let him run the program how he wants to run it, within the guidelines of being ethical and within the rules, whatever. But like, in terms of hiring coaches, you want him to be able to hire whoever he wants, and not like, well, that's great. You can hire 8 of your 10 coaches, but you're going to keep these two guys because they used to coach in Texas.
Well, and he may have considered it and then just decided against it, or felt more comfortable with the guys that he had. You know what Reset Man's asking, you know, he's not saying that we should have forced him to keep one or two of his coaches. Just if we thought that's one true. Of these guys would have been beneficial for him to keep, I think Jones would have been good for him to keep. I think he had a good connection with recruits, but Wells probably felt like, you know, he already kind of had that covered, even though he hadn't been down here as much and had to probably will have to learn some stuff on the fly a little bit. I'm blanking on our strength guy.
Schultz.
No.
Rusty Witt.
Witt. Yeah. That was one that kept getting bringing
current
up.
Current or most previous?
And Shire kept getting brought up too.
Shire.
And yeah. So we definitely had some good coaches that warranted Wells to look at keeping. I don't fault him for it. It's just kind of part of it. When a head coach gets fired, you kind of know that just about everything else is going to be rolling out the door with him. So I don't know. I think it wouldn't have hurt him to keep a couple of them, but I can't dictate that for sure. That's a very terrible answer. I'm sorry. The more I talked, the less I was convincing anyone, not even myself.
Yeah. So there are still a few remaining spots on the staff, and it looks like Wells is going to wait till after the early signing period has concluded to finalize the staff. So there are at least 2 positions available. I think it's linebacker and defensive line coaches. There are a couple of guys from his previous staff at Utah State that remained at Utah State. Hmm. And I don't think that's a indication that they're not going to be joining Texas Tech. I think he had to leave somebody there to help
coach
them
the bowl game.
To get them through the bowl game. Like, it would have been it would have looked really bad if he just said, okay, all 10 guys are coming with us right now. Strength staff is coming with us. You guys have a bowl game to play in a month, and you have no coaching staff. Good luck.
Good luck, everybody.
That would have been a bad look. He left a few guys behind. And again, I don't know if these guys are going to be making the transition to Lubbock. I think one of the guys that we would like to see make that jump is MacGyver. Still to be seen if he's going to end up staying at Utah State. They did rehire Gary Anderson back to take over after Wells has left. So we'll see how he builds the staff. If he wants to retain some of those last two guys from Wells' staff.
Right.
And if not, you've got the opportunity to go and grab the next Emmett Jones, if you will. You can go to Duncanville, DeSoto, Oak Cliff, South Oak Cliff High School. It's like, hey, you want to be a linebacker coach for me and help me recruit DFW? Or somebody from the Houston area that I'm not familiar with because I don't know Houston. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how he wraps up his staff. I just don't think, one, that you should expect a new head coach to retain any of the existing staff.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair to make that a stipulation on a new hire. We'll have to see how that works out. The next question, Shane Huffman. Any way we can get Michael LaBarre on the episode for a possible Red Raiders update? So here's the thing. I think that's a great idea. And I think with the timing of everything, because today's the 11th, the signing period starts, what, the 19th?
I think so.
Now, it may set him up to look very poorly or to look pretty bad. But if we had him on next week, the 18th, to give us an update, like here's where we are, it would publish right before signing day starts. So,
well, he replied to that.
Recruiting is always like real crazy. I didn't see the reply. What did he say?
LaBarre replied to it and said, "Update: coaches go places and talk to people about football and stuff."
What a douchey thing to say. Come on, dude.
Then Shane replied with some fire and said, "Now that's the kind of hot take we need."
Yeah. So, LaBarre, if you're listening, an hour into the episode, I had to check our timer.
Yeah. We have a timer.
We'd love to have you on next week, man.
Sure. This is your official invitation.
There was another invitation that we still need to make, and it's to Casey Cowan.
That's right.
That would be a fantastic evening, I believe. I just don't know with his professional schedule, especially with the holidays, if there's an evening available for...
There's probably a place available.
Slumming it with us podcasters.
Podcasters.
We're like bloggers.
We're
talking. We are.
Talking bloggers.
We're talking bloggers. That would be a great name for a podcast.
Why didn't we do that?
The Talking Bloggers.
The Talking Bloggers.
Update. Next week, we will be the Talking Bloggers podcast.
At tortillatown.com.
Adele, for your ranking consideration, back to talking about the top five.
Top movie five cars. Vehicles. Yep.
Bullet Mustang, it made the list. General Lee made our list. Smokey and the Bandit Pontiac Trans Am.
Yes.
All three were on either our top five or honorable mention lists.
Delightful vehicles.
So way to go, Adele. You read our mind. We were reading yours. Cooper Burnett. So, okay, he throws out a list, and I'm going to say I have an issue with his number one. We weren't specific to cars or trucks when we said vehicles, but his number one is the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's hard to beat.
And it's.
I wish I'd have thought more of that.
Right.
When I saw that,
I'm like, well, dang it! I could have thought of a cool spaceship.
The Falcon would have been great.
Number two, DeLorean, when it hits 88 miles per hour.
You're gonna see some serious stuff. PG-13.
helicarrier from the Avengers, the flying aircraft carrier. He says, seems kind of unnecessary, to be honest, but still cool. I would agree. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hard pass in number four, Polar Express, free hot chocolate.
I'm not a big enough upkeep on a train.
I'm not a big enough fan of hot chocolate to want to go on a
train. Yeah, and then you've got there's that section where you just go across a lake, that just a frozen lake with no track. That just seems a little haphazard.
And then number five was actually on our list, as well as number two, the Rumbler from the Dark Knight trilogy, because Batman.
That's a great one. I really like the. Like the original Batmobile 2 from the Tim Burton movies with Michael Keaton. That funky, crazy looking Batmobile that was probably 25 feet long.
And the ones from...
It was pretty much built around a jet turbine.
Turbine.
And turbine.
The ones from the Val Kilmer and George Clooney.
Oh, those are pretty rough. You can see stuff like shaking on them as they drive around with...
Yeah.
Yeah, those are pretty sad.
So Tyson Linerose, again, if we butcher your name, sorry. This is, I think, his first question. So thanks for joining us on the podcast, Tyson. Does Optimus Prime count?
If you have a CDL, yes. If the Millennium Falcon counts, then Optimus Prime counts. Yeah.
So then he gives us his top five. Five, Optimus Prime. Eleanor from Gone in 60 Seconds. The Porsche 928 from Risky Business. I haven't seen this one.
That's pretty good.
But Porsche, pretty good. 61 Ferrari GT250 California Spider. I don't know if it's the same year the one I listed, but it's from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It may have been a very similar body style between those years.
It's got to be the same car, though.
Well, the car from the movie. So if we're talking about whatever car that car is from the movie, yes, we agree.
Oh, okay.
Green Goblin semi truck or Maximum Overdrive.
I actually thought of Maximum Overdrive, Tyson, and then I forgot to put it in my honorable mentions later. And I know exactly what you're talking about. Do you know what he's talking about, Spencer?
No.
Oh, this is a.
I'm gonna look it up right now.
This is a crazy movie that was. The complete and total soundtrack was done by AC/DC.
And that's a good start.
Their song, Who Made Who, it was kind of the big song of the movie. And what it is a comet comes to Earth. And while this, it kind of leaves, I'm going to butcher this, sorry. I haven't seen this movie in probably 20 years. But this comet comes to Earth and it impacts all of the mechanical things on Earth to where they have a mind of their own now. And so Emilio Estevez is working at this truck stop, and all of a sudden these trucks start circling the truck stop on their own. You know, steamrollers are running over kids at Little League games, and Coke machines are spitting out Cokes and killing people, and you know, anything electric can...
This
or anything mechanical, it doesn't matter if it's electric or not, can hurt you or kill you or whatever. It's a crazy movie, and it seemed like it always came on cable when I was a kid, and it always freaked me out, and I know exactly what he's talking about with that. It was a toy truck. It had hauled toys for some toy company, and it had this crazy-looking goblin thing on the grill of it with red eyes, and it was kind of the leader.
Happy Dots.
That sounds right.
That sounds toys.
Yeah, that was some nightmare fuel for me as a kid because I loved cars. I was obsessed with them. And then the idea of them coming alive to try to kill me was really...
Oh, it's a Stephen King movie.
It was tough for me to swallow.
Dude, I'm going to have to go like... So when you were describing that scene when the trucks are circling, I was like, that sounds familiar, like enough where like I could see it.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've seen part of this movie.
You probably have. It has come on cable so many times. And the other... You know, I think the opening scene of it is... Back to, you know, how Blues Brothers had an opening scene where they jump a drawbridge that opens. This drawbridge opened on its own with all the cars on it. So all the cars were still on it and people were, you know, there's a lot of carnage. A lot of carnage in this
movie. I'm going to have to go check this out. I'm excited.
But yeah, a kid.
A
kid
movie gets, I want to go watch now.
I'm pretty sure a kid gets run over by a steamroller trying to run away from it during after his Little League game. He's on his bicycle and he falls and Steamroll. There's another one where an army truck, not an army truck, but an army Jeep with a machine gun on the back of it pulls up and shoots up the truck stop because it can.
Good times.
They force the people to put gas in them. they force the people to put diesel and gas in the trucks. It's wild, man.
So I'm always amused when people change their name on Twitter, and not their handle, but their name.
Yeah.
So Still Skippin's name on Twitter now is The Brisket Wanter.
That's great.
That's so good. He asked, how'd recording go? We saw this 4 hours late, but still wanted to ask a question. I'm glad you chimed in and said,
yeah, I was started. There.
So there's still time. And then he finally responded, do you think we're going to have to weather a quote NASCAR offense effect as we transition from Cliff's not really an air raid anymore offense to a more generic college spread? Yeah, because
I thought of that too.
The big difference we saw with Neil Brown is it was a lot of horizontal passing. There was a lot of wide receiver flanker screens and a lot of draws. Now I haven't done like play call analysis on Yost to see what he does. A lot to say. Here's what you can expect. It's obviously going to be different from what we've seen in Texas Tech the past few years. We've seen it even change year to year while the staff was the same. We saw probably the biggest difference this year with Kevin Johns. New tweet from Matt Wells. Wreck 'em.
Oh, man.
I set up an alert, so anytime he tweets, I get a notification. So,
he just signed
breaking
somebody
news.
Else.
10:06 Tuesday, December 11th. Wreck 'em.
Wow.
But to Brian's point, he needs to put an apostrophe in there. I think there will be some groaning for those that are a little more familiar with the X's and O's of the game. You're going to see a difference in the offense. I can't speak to exactly what that's going to look like because I haven't done enough analysis either way. You could probably look to a guy like Ian Boyd to have some kind of analysis on that kind of level. There's probably be some groaning because, one, there may be some periods of ineffectiveness. And you're like, right. Man, if we just had Kingsbury, we would be great. Well, what's going to happen is people are going to forget that, like, well, there was a lot of times when Kingsbury's offenses were ineffective and not moving the ball. I just would really, really hate to see going like the super up-tempo speed that Yost has been talking about and go three and out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to come back and talk about because I know that was emphasized a lot with Brown and Tuberville is we're going to go fast and bloop, bloop, bloop.
And then, I won't go fast.
Yeah, and
if you're not first, you're last.
And Kingsbury did that a couple of years too, where the emphasis was there. It was how many seconds in between snaps, you know, fast as fast can possibly be, and
with the hope of wearing out the opponent's defense. When actually it just wore out your defense.
Yeah,
faster.
When you get one first down, that's not really going to wear anybody out, and that's sometimes you didn't get that. That's what I'm the most worried about is if we get out there and go three and out or get one first down or, you know, get 20 yards on a drive and a minute and a half has gone off the clock, you kind of think, is this just what we're going to do every single time just because that's what we do? But that kind of goes back to your point of there's going to be some growing pains because they may just have to stick with things that they feel will work, even if they're not working right that second.
But then I also have to believe. I don't have to believe. I'm choosing to believe.
Yes, you do. You must. Oh, you must believe.
The tools available to Yost and Wells at Texas Tech far superior to what they had available at Utah State. The receiving talent, the offensive line, the running backs, all that much, much better than Utah State. Not that I think the Texas Tech offense is going to be lights, you know, or leaps and bounds better than Utah State because you're obviously going to be having to deal with a step up in defensive competition as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you think
goes
about it,
goes both ways, man.
Like, Alan Bowman, without question, is better than the quarterback at Utah State, Love, whatever his first name was. I'm sorry, dude. their wide receiving core, I don't think had a guy like an Antoine Wesley on it, but like they're going to have weapons at Texas Tech that I don't think they were used to at Utah State, and they were still really successful. So I'm encouraged there, because it would be one thing if they had like moderate success and had like tools and talent and skill available to them comparable to what they'd have at Texas Tech. They won't. It's going to be a marked step up.
So. Should be.
Drew Borsellino. Just saw y'all haven't recorded it, so let me slide one in here. I appreciate his slide one in here because it gave me the mental image of Collinsworth sliding into that broadcast.
Oh, that's been, gosh, Al Michaels. Been really so caught good. On this year.
And dude was wearing a turtleneck the last week. It was so good. Without saying the same, this is a good question. Without saying the same, will Texas Tech have a better record in 2019 than they did in 2018? So we're saying, are they going to be 4-8 or worse, or 6-6 and better? I'm going to say better. I'm going to say Texas Tech will be at least 6-6 in 2019.
All right, here's where this is bad radio, because I agree. I feel the same way. A lot of it has to do with the Big 12 itself. You know, Kyler Murray is going to be gone, but OU is still going to be great.
Will Greer's gone.
Will Greer's gone. All those receivers are gone. Ellinger will still be around. I think Texas will probably be towards the top of the conference, if not at the top next year, unfortunately.
I think you could probably make an argument that they could overtake OU.
Yeah, they could.
Because of the loss they're going to have on offensive talent.
Yeah, when you lose your
Heisman
back-to-back Heisman guys, you... Unless he pulls another rabbit out of the hat.
By the way, Kyler Murray won the Heisman this weekend.
Did you know that? I heard about that.
Did you know it was?
Do you know he used to play at A&M?
Did you know that Oklahoma didn't recruit either one of their past?
Neither one. Did you know? Did you know they worked at other?
Did you know that Lincoln Riley was like the only coach that has won or has taken his team in the first 2 years to the college playoff and had Heisman winners? Like.
Do you know that Kyler Murray plays baseball?
Do you know that he's going to make millions of dollars next year, whatever he's playing?
Oh, but what if he doesn't play football? Is that just the dumbest move ever? Because a lot of people are arguing that it's really dumb to do one and not the other, and I don't care. Congratulations, Murray. I mean that. Dude, I still could not believe how fast he was when he played Tech. I hadn't watched much OU ball, but my gosh, what a fast kid.
So, okay, what...
Anyway, really, sorry.
Hold on, before we move off this. What bothered me most about the Heisman presentation this weekend, on the cable schedule, listed from 7 to 8 p.m.
Yeah.
I tuned at 7:45. I was like, I'm going to catch the end of them just talking about the candidates, get to the announcement and the presentation and the thank you speech. They announced Kyler Murray as the winner of the Heisman at 8:03. I was like, if you're going to roll into the next program, like you had to know this was coming.
Well, it's just like I used to stay up when I cared. I would stay up late enough to see who won Best Picture at the Oscars.
It's
the same way. It was always 5-10 minutes after the show was supposed to end. They would finally say it. This was when I was in high school or whatever, and I was interested in it, and it just always irked me, because you tune in and it's 9:30 or whatever, and like it's over at 10, and it's like, okay, I'll tune in now. No, you've got 45 minutes to wait.
All right, so 2019, you're going to agree with me that Texas is going to be better than 5-7.
Yes.
Are you saying 6-6? Or are you saying better?
I'm saying 6-6. Yeah, that's what I'm saying right now.
Here's where I think you have a great shot of being better. One, your non-conference schedule in 2019 is more winnable than your 2018. You had Ole Miss and Houston on this schedule. You split those games. Next year, you've got Arizona.
Yeah, they had a rough year.
They were rough. And the other two games are... like Montana State and somebody else. I don't remember who it was.
I don't either.
So you've got a better chance of going 3-0 in non-conference, and then you just need to win three games. So you should have beaten Baylor this past season. I think that'll still stand. You should have beaten Kansas State this year. I think that'll still stand. Even like you'll be going up against a new coach, a winner at Kleeman, Chris Kleeman from North Dakota State. They finally hired that guy. I think you'll have a great shot to beat West Virginia. Oh my gosh, I did it again. West Virginia. There's so many R's. There's one R, but
it's in Morgantown though.
TCU. It doesn't matter. TCU. They don't have Will Greer. They don't have Sills. They don't have Jennings. I'm not intimidated by a bunch of nobodies.
Should have it.
I'm claiming that December of 2018.
Yeah,
write it down so when we come back and like, oh my gosh, they're gonna
told you.
Well, yeah, big book it or whatever it is. TCU lost their starting quarterback. He's transferring out. You'd expect the guy behind him is going to be better than Sean.
Yeah,
Robinson.
I was about to say that's not going to really hurt.
K-State lost their starting quarterbacks.
Kansas is going to be an enigma. We're not sure what the Les Miles effect is going to have.
Probably going to go like 8-4 or something.
You've got a very winnable schedule next year, even though you've got Texas and Oklahoma on the road. You're not sure what Oklahoma is going to be without Kyler Murray. Rodney Anderson's gone. Marquise Brown and CeeDee Lamb are likely gone.
Yep.
So there's a lot of rebuilding teams around, or not reloading teams around. A lot like this year, you may have an opportunity to kind of sneak up and win more games than maybe you would have otherwise expected because the rest of the conference is down. So I'm going to stick with it, you know, December 11th, 2018, that the 2019 season will win six games or better or more. Michael says 6-6 exactly.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
Well, that was the last question. So thanks for those, everybody. Appreciate the interaction. Michael, what have you learned this week?
Unfortunately, it's something I started off the podcast with, but I just can't get over it. There's a place called Moose Knuckles and Posts, and I need to get a cheeseburger there. That's what I learned. When Beard started talking about Post, I knew that he liked jerky, so I thought he was going to talk about Jackson Brothers just off the main drag there in Post, where you can get some of the best jerky I've ever had, and they're a butcher. So it's just Jackson Brothers meat or Jackson Brothers
Butchers.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly the full name, but it's a great place to stop and get you some.
There was a local,
some of the best jerky you'll ever get.
Meat shop, butcher shop that popped up in my Twitter timeline. Is like, hey, I'd be a pretty solid podcast sponsor.
Yeah,
I can't remember who it was.
Okay,
at this point, but
well, you've brought Klimke's jerky over here before. This podcast was literally fueled by Klimke's jerky one day.
Tonight it's sponsored. It's not sponsored.
I'm going to say Klimke's again.
Klimke's
in Slayton, Texas, right next to Slayton Bakery, where we've bought the Reckham's cookies before. Or I did.
I've never stopped at Slayton Bakery.
Really? Oh, that's great. You got to go. You got to get a thumbprint cookie.
I can make those at home, though. What am I?
Yeah, but these are different. They're like little tiny. They're really small sugar cookies, and the icing is about the exact same size as the cookie, and they're little bite-sized things. They're great.
So what I learned today was Michael has an unhealthy obsession with these cookies.
I do. I have an unhealthy obsession with lots of foods.
Lots of sweets.
Yeah.
Speaking of food really quickly, I went to West Table tonight. I'm not about the fancy, tricked up dining experience,
which is why you hate on my craft house.
It is
recommendation, which is
recommendation.
You're just so wrong. recommendation. You know what I mean.
So there are literally like two restaurants in town that I'm like, no, that's not my kind of food. It's Craft House and West Table. I went to West Table tonight.
You're so incorrect.
I will kind of agree with you because we got the, what were they? The crab hush puppies.
Oh, my.
I didn't have any of those. I'm not about seafood. We got the sweet and spicy chicken wings. That had a really good sweet heat to it. And then I got the lamb chops. My first time having lamb. Very reminiscent to a fairly thick ribeye steak. Really good.
You should go back to Kraft House.
I'm glad I tried something that wasn't steak. I got to try the braised short rib and the double bone-in pork chop. All good things tonight.
I was telling you before we started.
Also, I think our bill for four people was like $250.
Yeah, it's pretty expensive. West Table's expensive. Kraft House is not as expensive. It's closer to, I don't know, just about anywhere you go, 10, 12 bucks or something. For most things, you can get a little bit more expensive. But West Table, when my wife and I went, I had a flank steak with a chimichurri sauce on it, which was excellent. And I just thought that I had really scored high points on my order until I tried the braised short ribs that she had. Probably one of the best things I've ever had at a restaurant.
So good.
Unreal. How it this is going to sound so dumb. It tasted so beefy. I don't know how else to explain it. It didn't taste like just broth or something. I mean, it tasted like the essence of beef.
It was essence great. Of beef. Yes. Good one. So I'm thinking we're probably need to get together for lunch again. We're going to have Keith introduce us someplace new because Joel's was a hit.
You bet. Joel's was great.
He probably knows of all these great untapped
treasures. Well, you just learned of one that you mentioned on this podcast about some place to get a burger.
Yeah. Cuevas was one. I've heard nothing but great things about the burgers at Christakis.
Yes. From Keith and I. Yeah. And I don't know if anyone else has had them or not, but yeah, the Christakis makes a great, great burger, especially the one with the pastrami on it.
Went to Cap Rock this week. Fantastic.
Oh, man.
I got the jealous. Down and Dirty chicken strip wrap. Oh, so good.
Down and Dirty is a
good sauce. Of course, I had to get some queso.
Yeah. You've got to.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. So I think that'll do it for us this week on the 23 Personnel Podcast. Join us next week as we get ready for Duke.